You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Live from the Civic Media World Headquarters in Madison, Wisconsin, it's the Todd Albaugh Show. And now, pursuing truth wherever it may lead, here's your host, Todd Albaugh.
Across Wisconsin on the Civic Media Radio Network and streaming worldwide on the Civic Media app. Good afternoon, everybody. I'm Todd Albaugh, along with Mr. Aaron Zommer as our producer and engineer. It is Friday, October 11th, 2024. It is a great day to be a Wisconsinite. Glad to have you along here on a TGIF edition, 6 minutes past the hour of 12 noon. Mr. Zommer, it's a beautiful day outside. Going to be a warm one up in the 80s for most of Wisconsin, at least those of us here in the southern part of the state, and then cooling down, just the exact kind of weather you like over the weekend.
Indeed, indeed. And you might be lucky enough, for those of you outside the major cities, if you didn't catch it last night, you might still be able to see Aurora Borealis, not contained entirely within your own kitchen, but outside.
outside. And a great place to see that, of course, is outside the city lights. And I'm going to go right to our first guest this morning, or this afternoon, rather. And by the way, Brady Ewing, former three-time Big Ten champion, captain of the Wisconsin Badger football team, and spent 3 years in the NFL, will join us at the bottom of the hour. But right now, out to the same hometown, the old Richland Center, home of WRCE there in Richland Center, and joined by a good friend of mine, happened to be my former boss, or one of them as well, former Senate Majority Leader for the state of Wisconsin, Republican Dale Schultz. Dale, thank you for kicking off the show and taking time to join us today. Before we get into the news, you still own your farm, family farm out there in southwest Wisconsin. I think that'd be a great place to catch the Aurora Borealis.
Well, I certainly hope so, because tonight, after going to the blues concert in town, my wife and I are planning on heading out there. We've seen it out there before, and it is a good spot, and hopefully it'll be clear.
Yeah, looking forward to it. For those who have never seen it, get out there and enjoy it. Well, Dale, I've known you a long time, used to work for you, and you continue, even after you're out of elective office, to make headlines. About an hour or so ago, you joined a former talk show host and of the Bulwark as well, Charlie Sykes, along with, I know, a good friend of yours, retired Wisconsin Court of Appeals Judge Dave Dottinger, making a big announcement today that you are endorsing Vice President Kamala Harris and Governor Tim Walz for President and Vice President of the United States, respectively.
That's right, Todd. After 50 years in politics, 32 years in the state legislature as a proud Republican, I am throwing my support to Kamala Harris and Tim Walz in their quest for the White House.
I think this is big news, and not just because we know each other. I know you're a humble guy, you know, when we talked to each other about your time in office, but it was undeniable, Dale. The reason this is a big deal, I believe, for you and Judge Dottinger, and quite frankly, former Sheriff of Iowa County, Steve Michek, a Republican as well, that there's a lot of people that voted for you, that admired you while you were in office for various reasons. And I think there's a lot of folks out there, particularly in rural Wisconsin, western Wisconsin, who are like, you know what, I'm still a Republican, at least the same kind of Republican that Ronald Reagan was and Tommy Thompson, at least during his time as governor, will set aside his current iteration of himself politically. But there's a lot of people that are like, am I the only one out here that feels this way? And that's why I think it's so important for you, and I'll let you speak for yourself. Why did you decide to endorse Kamala Harris and Tim Walz now? And was there some sort of a flashpoint that just said, now's the time I got to do it?
Well, first of all, my friends, Sheriff Michek and Judge Dottinger, are exceptional people who were popular for many years in their own right in their respective counties. And I always admired their leadership, and I'm proud to join them in hopefully sending a message to our friends and neighbors in southwestern Wisconsin that, you know what, it's okay to sometimes be an American before you are a partisan. While we may all be proud to be Republicans, we're We're more glad to be Americans. And the American dream, I think, is at risk. You know, you look around us and all you see is drama, drama that is about no hope and only seeks to promote misery, misery that can be exploited. And I fundamentally, I think that's wrong, because politics, as you've heard me say many, many times, is about hope. And then when we finally get that message out there, we have to be concerned about delivering. And I think Kamala Harris and Tim Walz are two people who share that idea about politics, about listening to people, understanding what is motivating them and making them afraid, and reassuring them it's going to be okay, and reassuring them with specific plans that address the kinds of concerns that they have. And other two gentlemen, as I mentioned, have a history of doing that, and I'm proud to join them. And I hope people will take this with the idea that, you know, they aren't alone, that there are others who are concerned, a lot of other people. I talk to a lot of people, and I hear it over and over again. And we want to make a difference, and we want to be at the table when decisions are made. And you know what? We're just not satisfied with a steady diet of cats and dogs and false information about horrific hurricanes that are hurting our friends and neighbors, and in my case, family, in the southeastern part of the country.
Talk to us a minute about that, Dale. Was that the thing, or what was the thing that said, I got to go public with this, I have to make a formal endorsement?
Well, I think it's a combination of factors, and I want to be candid. Listening to my friend Sheriff Michek explain in Ripon why he was making the decision he made was a powerful influence. I've also grown more and more concerned about the fate of agriculture. It's tough times on the farm right now, and there aren't many farmers left, it seems, and I'm worried. There are still a lot of farm or food processing businesses in our part of the state, and they're not going to exist without farmers. So I see that, and then on top of that, I see just the most despicable use of people who are suffering a lot for political purposes. Todd, as you know, we spent a lot of time working with people in floods, and those floods, as terrible as they were, as much as they caused suffering, are nothing in comparison to what's happened to our fellow countrymen in the southeastern part of the country. And this past week, my wife's niece, who had just been married the week before, flew into Tampa right before the forecast changed, and that Tampa would be the direct hit of the hurricane. And man, I mean, suddenly it took on a very, very personal feeling for my whole family. Mm-hmm. And I just said, you know what, that's it. I've had enough. It's time to stand up and point out to people that Donald Trump should never, ever, ever be allowed anywhere near power, because the lack of humanity is just that significant. People need to know they can count on their leaders.
We're talking with former Republican Wisconsin State Senate Majority Leader Dale Schultz. First interview after having announced about an hour ago, along with Charlie Sykes and former Wisconsin Court of Appeals Judge Dave Donier, that he is endorsing Kamala Harris and Tim Walz for president and vice president of the United States. Dale, I think that what you just said, and for those people that didn't hear our coverage last week of the vice president and former Republican representative, Congresswoman from Wyoming, Liz Cheney, in Ripon, when former Iowa County Sheriff Republican Steve Michek joined them. Mitchick said, you know, as a law enforcement guy, I voted for Trump in 2016 because I thought he was going to be tough on, you know, tough on crime. He goes, boy, did I come to regret it. And he made the point that anybody who's in law enforcement or supports law enforcement, simply you cannot vote for Trump, that his actions on January 6th or what he didn't do on January 6th, in Mitchick's words, were disqualifying, quote unquote. Do you share the similar feeling?
I do. And I'd like to point out Liz Cheney has made the same comment. Participation, being there, cheerleading, what happened on January 6th is something that should bother every American. What it means to be an American, what it symbolized, was never more starkly put before us. I mean, to see a mob batter their way through lines of police, injuring and killing those individuals to break into the Capitol was just mind-blowing for me. Not since the War of 1812 has our country suffered such an attack. And I'm just proud of the fact that Liz Cheney right away stood up and said, you know, this is probably one of the most important things I'll ever do. A real inspiration and a real leader.
Yeah. Talking with Dale Schultz right now, former Senate Majority Leader, about his endorsement of Harris Walz on the ticket. One of our listeners, Matt from Menominee Falls, listening in on WAUK, says, ask Dale about voting for the rest of the down ballot Democrats. Dale, what is your feeling on that? Other folks like Derek Van Orten, who were also there on January 6th.
Well, let me speak to Derek Van Orten, first of all. As Liz Cheney said, being there is disqualifying. And the last time I checked Facebook, Derek Van Orten was there. And I think that pretty much says all I have to say about Congressman Van Orten. With respect to voting down ballot.
30 seconds left in this segment. Go ahead.
Look, Harris and Walz are going to need folks to help implement a positive, joyful agenda for all of us. And without that, I think we're going to see an exploitive, negative image of ourselves reflected back on the nightly television. And I don't want that.
Former State Senator Dale Schultz, Majority Leader. Is he still a Republican? Don't answer, Dale. Come on back. You'll hear it right here on the Todd Allbowles Show on Civic Media.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Each day you've got to stand for something, or you'll fall for anything. You've got to be your own man, not a puppet on a string. And never compromise what's right, and uphold your family name. Oh, you've got to stand for something, or you'll fall for anything.
Welcome back to the Todd Allbowles Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. It is now 21 past the hour of 12 noon. Dan Schaefer, the Recombobulation Area's founder and veteran Milwaukee journalist, has joined Civic Media as political editor. Dan will continue to edit and write for the popular Wisconsin and Milwaukee political news publication, while also helping shape the voice of Civic Media's political coverage. Civic Media pleased to announce the addition of the Recombobulation area to its growing Wisconsin media network, the first non-radio acquisition since its founding in 2022. Welcome back to the program. We are talking with former state senator and Senate Majority Leader Dale Schultz, a Republican. At least that's what he was when I worked for him. Great music there, by the way, Mr. Zommers. Great to have someone standing up. That's the kind of guy that Dale's always been since I've known him. But Dale, we teased it. Let's answer the question. Do you consider yourself still, do you call yourself a Republican?
Absolutely. A proud Republican. A Republican that reflects Abraham Lincoln's leadership, hopefully, for the Republican Party at its founding in Ripon, Wisconsin. It reflects the kind of leadership that President Teddy Roosevelt, gave this country when he did so much for conservation. And Dwight Eisenhower, as he thought about what we could do to prepare for the future as he built infrastructure. And yes, even my good friend Tommy Thompson, who I disagree with on this matter, but who brought people together. And that's the key. I think we need to come together in this country. I think Kamala Harris has demonstrated that, certainly during this hurricane. And, you know, when I think about Tim Walz, I'm thinking about a bro, man. Here's a guy who, like me, likes to carry a shotgun and walk along behind a couple of fine pointers and you know, fill the larder for the long, long winter.
Dale Schultz on his announcement today that he is joining retired Judge Deininger along with Sheriff Michick of Iowa County, former sheriff there, as Republicans who and conservatives who are now endorsing Kamala Harris and Tim Walz. Off the text line, L.A. Tom listening out in Los Angeles saying simply, thank you, Dale. Let's go to the phone lines quickly, 855-752-4842. Mark in Prairie du Sac. Mark, thanks for calling. What do you got?
Yeah, thanks. It's Mark from the SAC, and God bless Senator Schultz for his announcement here that it's kind of the baseline for me that I've been challenging Republican candidates to answer the question, you know, do you think, that condemn the maintenance of the people that maintained that the election of 2020 was stolen, the fake electors conspiracy, and the insurrection of January 6th, which was not just a mild thing, you know, just a peaceful protest. It was a violent attack on the Republic. And thanks to Senator Schultz. I mean, that I wish he was still there rather than getting driven out of the party by the and he's probably glad to be out of there. I mean, frankly.
Well, Dale, are you? Are you glad to be out of there?
well, first of all,
I get out and enjoy the hunting.
First of all, after 32 years, I think most people can understand a desire to go someplace else. I don't feel like I was driven anywhere. It was time for new leadership. We have a terrific crop of young leaders in this state that are going to, I think, do great things. It's kind of Mark to say those things about me, but no one has to feel sorry for me in any shape, way or form. I really feel like I got the world by the tail. And yep, once in a while, my dog Moses and I enjoy a walk outside and a long conversation.
855-752-4842. Back to the phone lines. One of Dale's former constituents in the big town of Yuba in Richland County, Lee in Yuba. What do you got?
Hi, I want to thank Dale for his stance. I know he's a good conservative. I don't know about Republican anymore. But the party has changed so much. But it's people like him that I think will help to save our republic. I'm a veteran. I'm not a fool or a loser or anything else the draft dodger might say. But I think he's right on when it comes to saving our republic. If things were reversed, I would do the same as he did. So I want to thank him so much for his stance.
Thanks so much, Lee. Dale.
You know, Lee, you're a terrific individual. And while we don't agree on every issue, we sure have a great time when we get an opportunity to wet a line and catch a few fish. And I look forward to those days more than you know, because I always feel like I have the opportunity to impart some wisdom and to receive some. And you know what? When we all do that, life's a lot better. And if our government could learn to do it, the possibilities are limitless.
855-752-4842. Let's go to WMDX, Matt in Middleton. Matt, if you can make it quick, go ahead, please.
Hey, Todd, I just wanted to bring up this. You guys talked about hope earlier, and it's Russia and Putin, that's some of hope and how everything's bad and it always will be. And that's similar to what the Republicans under MAGA are campaigning on, is, and you mentioned it earlier, that lack of hope and division and ugliness. So I just wanted to point that out, that it's similar to Russia and the way they operate.
Yeah, Matt, really appreciate the call on WMDX. Dale, about a minute and a half left. I'll let you use it however you want. I think you wanted to follow up a little bit on that down ballot voting this fall.
Well, let me just say, I hope that my friends and neighbors who so generously supported me for those 32 years will pay attention to the issues, listen to the candidates, and come to a conclusion that the Harris-Waltz team is the best for our future, and we'll get out and vote. I'll say it again, we'll get out and vote because it is so important. Our future depends on it.
Dale Schultz, former Senate Majority Leader, still a Republican. And Dale, I think that's a big, I think that's what makes this endorsement more powerful, because you're not a mega Republican. You're of the old ilk of Republicans. And the fact that you're like, you just got off that German stubbornness, like, I'm not going anywhere, you know, because still believe what you believe.
Yep. And you know what? I think being an independent sort of a cuss is, and a bit of a bad lad, is what made me so endearing.
I think you're right. Dale Schultz, big announcement. He's endorsing Harris-Waltz. Thank you very much, Dale. We appreciate it.
You bet, Todd.
Come on back. We'll learn more about Wisconsin Badger football and talk about adversity with Brady Ewing. Not going to want to miss it on the Todd Allball Show.
Badgers football today. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Wisconsin Badgers are in New Jersey to take on Rutgers. Wisconsin with a record of 3-2. Rutgers is 4-1. In Green Bay, Packers wide receiver Romeo Doubs says he had some things going on mentally that led to his one-game suspension last weekend. Doubs spoke to reporters after yesterday's practice.
I had some things going on mentally. I do not feel comfortable getting too deep into that, but just, you know, you guys hearing it from me, there's some things I had going on for myself. I did my best communicating, and I'm just thankful that, you know, that I'm here right now, you know, able to still play ball.
The Packers host the Arizona Cardinals tomorrow, and quarterback Kyler Murray says he's looking forward to his first game at Lambeau Field.
It's going to be a good challenge for us to go on the road, a place I haven't played before personally, first time, great environment, be, you know, really historic place. A lot of great players have played in that stadium, so I'm excited about it.
As Cardinals quarterback Kyler Murray with sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Wherever it may lead, and having fun doing it. Welcome back to the Town Hall Ball Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. It is now 34 minutes past the hour of 1 o'clock on this Thursday, October 10th, 2024. Mr. Zommer's on the board, Todd behind the mic, and many thanks to Kelly Call for joining us once again. How about that, Mr. Zommer's? I mean, taking time out of his, he's a busy guy, and he comes talks to us about this great new film, Just a Bit Outside, closing in some theaters today. Opening in others, check justabitoutside.com.
Or justabitoutsidethemovie.com.
Thank you for the correction. Justabitoutsidethemovie.com and also marcustheaters.com.
If you haven't seen the movie and you heard Kelly's passion talking about it here, that passion is very evident in watching the film.
That's a good way to put it. You can tell there's a lot of love put into that by the proud Badger alum. And right now at 35 minutes past the hour, we can turn to another proud Badger alum. She is here in the studio. We appreciate it so very much. A guest that has, who is a Wisconsin State archaeologist, has a lot of experience in Wisconsin's and the Midwestern United States archaeologically scene. And also her work has spanned public, private, and educational sectors of archaeology amongst her many degrees. She has a PhD in anthropology from the University of Wisconsin-Madison. We welcome Dr. Amy Roseborough to the program. Dr. Roseborough, thanks for coming in.
Oh, no, thank you for having me today.
Well, and you know, we were out in Los Angeles last week to cover Wisconsin-USC game, and we had a chance to catch up with Kelly and his production partner on this movie, Sean. But you've traveled a lot. There are Badgers everywhere, right?
All over the place. And Packers even further than that.
Right? Yeah, right? Yeah, we're a passionate lot. But I think, to me, the University of Wisconsin and the system, I know now universities or whatever it's called now, but it's the Wisconsin idea. Let's just put it that way, that the borders of our state are the borders of our university. And I appreciate you coming in because this is kind of a niche thing. I know not niche to you, but perhaps there's a lot of Wisconsinites that don't even know that we have a state archaeologist and what that person does.
Oh, and many states have a state archaeologist. So we're all over the place, you know,
right.
At least 50 of us, and Guam.
Really?
And Guam.
And Guam. Wow, that's fantastic. So tell us a little bit about where you grew up and kind of how, what drew you into archaeology and this vocation.
Oh, my. So grew up, if my accent may betray, in the Ozark Mountains. So I'm a little bit of a hillbilly.
I didn't get it that way. That's great.
Yeah. So, right at the Missouri-Arkansas line. And I had family members that lived in Washington, D.C., and we'd go see the Smithsonian, and we'd look at all the amazing history there. And especially the dinosaurs, because when you're a little kid,
right.
It's all about dinosaurs. Yeah. And so many people think, archaeology, that's dinosaurs. And I was one of those kids. And nowadays, like, no, it's not dinosaurs. Not at all. Something completely different. But, you know, when I found out what archaeology actually was, you know, the study of the human past, like, okay, that's even better. You know, there's still people around, not that many, you know, T-Rexes roaming up and down the streets.
Right. Would it be fair to say you're kind of the Indiana Jones of the University of Wisconsin?
No.
Okay, not really. But...
I don't mind snakes, dislike spiders, and I'm no good with a bullwhip at all.
So you went into this vocation and your PhD here at UW-Madison. Just coming here and studying, is that what you kind of, like a lot of folks, fell in love with Wisconsin or Madison, you wanted to stay?
Absolutely it. So my undergraduate advisor in Missouri was actually an alumni. And he said, you've got to go to UW. And came time for master's, Arkansas offered me a little bit more money. Like, all right, we'll try that. But one of the professors there, again, UW alumni, he said, you got to go to Madison. So when it came time for PhD, like, oh, I don't know, that's awfully far north. You guys have a lot of snow and ice and things. But, you know, I survived that first winter. So I thought, okay, you know, I'm alive. I can keep going. And, you know, Wisconsin really did turn out to be a fantastic place. I have fallen in love with it. It's a beautiful, beautiful state with some amazing archaeology. And I am sometimes beside myself that now I get to talk about that archaeology and bring it to people all the time. So this is just the dream job.
Well, it's a dream to have you here because what captured our attention, and I think this became a big news story across the state, was this discovery of an indigenous canoe that have been, I'll use the word whether it's proper or not, buried under water and silt and resurrected. And can you tell us a little bit, a brief overview about the timeline of this exciting discovery in Lake Mendota?
Oh, yeah. That the canoe was, a surprise for sure. So the canoe came to our attention in 2021. So right in the middle of the COVID pandemic, we were actually in between state archaeologists at the time. And Tamara Thompson, so she's a diver with our program. She normally focuses on Great Lakes shipwrecks. She's a member of the Women's Hall of, Diving Hall of Fame. And she was just sort of messing around in the lake on a beautiful June Saturday, as she says, swimming along, picking up trash and chasing fish. Right. And her partner hit the halfway point in her air and stopped and signaled that they need to turn around. And when Tammy looked down, she was hovering directly over the exposed end of the canoe.
Wow.
And that got the whole thing started.
And so did she realize what it was when she saw it or what it could be? Or was it like, wow, that's something just not normal. We need to investigate that more.
Oh, she knew what it was.
Really?
Yeah. If, wow. Of all the people that could have come across the canoe, she's the perfect person to do it. She had been looking at dugout canoes in little historical societies and museums all across Wisconsin, helping a grad student with UW-Madison, you know, their connection there. And so she knew what they looked like out of the water. And then here was one still in the water. And she gives me a call, said, Amy, come out on the boat with me. Like, it's a Saturday. It's a gorgeous Saturday. I'm like, yeah, sure, why not? And that, yeah, she said, there's these weird rocks in it. I'm like, okay, I can't dive.
Right.
Yeah. I'm very much a terrestrial archaeologist. I said, so show me the rocks. So she took some pictures, showed them, and she brought a few up. And we looked. And, yeah, these are actual artifacts.
Wow.
And so it turned out there was a set of net weights. Stone net wake still in the canoe. And that should have been our first indicator that it was a little older than we expected to have stone tools in there. But at the time, we wouldn't let ourselves think it was that old.
For those non-educated people in these types of things, what does that really mean? So they're like farm tools? What sort of tool? Or canoeing tools? Or what?
So they're just weights. So there's a set of seven rocks. They're all a little bit bigger than a deck of playing cards, but they're thin. And someone had very carefully picked up stones on the beach that already had sort of notches or grooves on each side where you could attach a cord. And if they couldn't find anything that was quite right, they would chip a groove there. And those were used to weight down the bottom of a gill net. In other words, there'd be a net held vertically in the water. You'd have floats, wood, or bottle gourds or something tied to the top to keep the top vertical. And then these stone weights would keep the bottom hanging down, and you'd wait for fish to swim into it and then go out later and get dinner.
So can you tell us the story? I understand, I haven't heard this anyplace else. There's a story about eagles when this was discovered.
The second canoe.
There's a second one after that.
So, yeah, the first canoe set off, you know, some survey. A lot of things went into high gear once we got the date back. So we got a new state archaeologist, Dr. James Skibo, came in. And the first thing he asked, is there anything I should know about? Well, there's a canoe in the lake. And we got some radiocarbon dates. We thought maybe 300 years old. And it came back at 1,200 years old. And like, okay, we've got something new. And that set off survey. And a year later, Tammy's out on the lake. And we get a text message. Hey, guys, I found another one. Not kidding. And like, what?
Wow.
So
in the same vicinity.
Same vicinity, just a few hundred feet away. And that changed everything for us. Like, well, okay, now it's just not a weird little shipwreck. We have a whole site here. And again, we just, okay, we will recover the second one because the radiocarbon date for that one came back at 3,000 years old.
Wow.
Which blew our minds. We had, by that point, we had a bunch of tribal collaborators, representatives of the Historic Preservation Department for the Ho-Chunk and Bad River Band, Menominee. We were in contact with a ton of people. And so when the second canoe came up, we had a huge crowd gathered on the beach. And as it arrived, everyone, of course, is looking at the canoe. And I kind of glanced up, kind of, you know, taking a breath, like, oh, boy, we did it again, you know. And an eagle comes down low over the beach, over everyone's heads, lifts up again. And I'm looking around. Did anyone else see that? And a couple other people are nodding at me. They saw it, too. I'm like, okay. The canoe is taken across town to Dickinson Street on the Isthmus to our preservation facility. And I followed a little bit behind. When I get out, someone said, did you see the eagle? Well, yeah, they came down right over the beach, and they went, beach? No. When we opened the door to the truck here at the building, an eagle came down and then went back up again. I'm like, okay, that's incredible. A little spooky, you know. Yeah. So there are a lot of things about this discovery that have kind of raised an eyebrow or two here and there.
And did any of the folks from any of the tribes that were there, did they see this? Did they equate any sort of, you know, indigenous spirituality to this?
Not that they've said. Uh-huh. And I have a feeling, you know, if they did, probably caving it to themselves.
Right.
I just know it put the hair up on the back of my neck.
Yeah. I mean, just in hearing you recount, I didn't know the whole story. I just knew that, you know, there were quote unquote eagles involved. But yeah, I mean, whether someone is a person of spirituality or not, when you have something like that happen, I'm sure it had to just be one of those moments when you're like, this is unique and something I may never experience again.
Oh, absolutely. You know, until the next time Tammy goes swimming in the lake.
So the first one was 12 or 1300 years old?
1200 years old.
And the second was 3000 years old.
3000. And we thought we'd be lucky if the first one was 200 years old.
Right.
And, you know, it shows what we know.
So yeah. You said there was kind of because there's a second one. It turns out this is a significant site. And by the way, we're talking to Dr. Amy Rosenbro, Wisconsin State archaeologist, about this find, this site of indigenous folks in Lake Mendota. What other things have you found from this site? What does it mean significantly in the state's history?
Well, more canoes, for one thing.
Really?
So when we raised the first one, mm-hmm. you know, pieces of wood were coming up, and Dr. Skibo was looking at them, and he's like, oh, this is a little weird. This one looks worked, but it must have fallen off the end of the first one. Mm-hmm. And we kind of made a note of that. We'll figure out how it fits onto it later when everything's, you know, prepared and curated. And then when they were excavating the second one, they had four divers, one on each corner of it, and three divers finished, got it free of the sediment and came up, and then one diver did not come back up. It's like, oh, what's taking him so long? So they went back down, and he's still working away, you know, fanning the silt. As you can imagine, all the silt's being stirred up, so the visibility's not good. He's doing a lot of this by feel. And they realized he had finished his bit and was now working on the canoe under the second canoe.
Oh, my gosh.
So they're canoe on a canoe. And that's, yeah, okay, now things are getting even more complicated. So Tammy went back and she surveyed. She waited till the visibility was about as good as it gets. She found more pieces of worked wood. We got radiocarbon dates from the canoe under the canoe. We got radiocarbon dates from the pieces that had been brought up before and realized, okay, we've got at least 10 canoes, either whole or in fragments at this site. And we're seeing what we think is an ancient beach under the lake. And there must have been a village or a living spot very close by. And these canoes represent thousands of years of people leaving them for the winter under the water and then not coming back or forgetting where they were or, that canoe was worn out anyway, I'll make a new one. Mm. Just thousands of years of canoes building up. Probably not just at that location, too. I have a feeling if you could drain Lake Mendota and the lakes around here, you'd have a bathtub ring of canoes around each one.
So what is it that over time that just through erosion or other things that the lake has grown or how, are you allowed to tell us how far down these are under the water?
Well, they're about 25 to 30. The same story. The wood that the canoes are made out of goes from the kind of wood you would see in open prairie savanna environments over time changing to closed canopy forest, you know, showing that the climate is changing and the forest are regrowing. And so then you're just seeing drought mm-hmm. near the end.
That's absolutely fascinating. We're talking with Dr. Amy Rosenbro. She is the Wisconsin State archaeologist and got to take a break here coming up shortly, doctor. But when we come back, I want to talk a little bit about can common everyday Wisconsin folk like me and most of our listeners, will we ever get a chance to see these canoes? How are they preserved, number one? Because I mean, I can't just like set them on a shelf somewhere, I wouldn't think. And what's ahead? Dr. Amy Rosenbro, Wisconsin State archaeologist, is our guest. Don't go anywhere. You're listening to the Todd Allball Show right here across Wisconsin on the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to the Buzz of the North, WBZH, Hayward's home for Nightlight with Peach Wabba.
Farmers in Wisconsin have always been ahead of the times, and it's no different in the mid-1800s. George Esterly was running a large wheat farm outside of Whitewater, but reaping his crop by hand was back-breaking work. Esterly invented a mechanical harvesting machine and used it in his own fields in 1844. He then won a Chicago Mechanics Gold Medal 4 years later. But was he the first in the country to build a harvesting machine? The answer is coming up. Esterly followed up his win by opening a factory in the Whitewater area, building the harvesting machines and eventually other farm equipment too. By the 1880s, 500 people worked there. So was Esterly the first in the country to build a new mechanical harvesting machine? Yes, this man's early farm invention lives on as a remarkable slice of Wisconsin. I'm Terry Barr.
The Buzz of the North, 910 AM WBZH.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Welcome back to the Town Hall Ball Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. 9 before the hour of 2 o'clock at the top of the hour. CBS News Radio or ABC News Radio, depending upon which station across the state you're listening to. Little sports and weather update, and then into the Maggie Dawn Show all across Wisconsin. Maggie Dawn every afternoon from 2 until 4, followed by the Dom Salvia Show, and then Pete Schwabba and Nightlight here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Right now, we are honored to be joined by the Wisconsin State Archaeologist. She is Dr. Amy Roseborough, who is here talking about this. It just blows my mind, Doctor. I'll be honest. This archaeological find in Lake Mendota, which those that might be from around the state, where is Lake Mendota? It's in Dane County. It's one of the two main lakes that border the isthmus and or create the isthmus in Madison. It's the bigger of the lakes. It's on the side of the UW campus. So if you've ever been down to the terrace, Todd and Kelly Call's favorite spot to watch the sunset, that's the lake we're talking about, right, Doctor?
Absolutely. I mean, right out in Madison's back door.
Yeah. And here we are, a diver happens upon this. We think it's one canoe, or you folks thought it was one, and you stumble upon essentially a site of an ancient civilization.
That's just it. And, you know, canoes that represent thousands of years of indigenous history in Madison, and they really remind us that, you know, this is indigenous territory. Mm-hmm. And the ancestors of the Ho-Chunk were here, the Ho-Chunk themselves were here, and then you get back thousands of years. Our oldest canoe fragment's 4,500 years old. By that point, you're talking about the ancestors of most of Wisconsin's Native nations, if not all. So it's a story of, you know, persistence and resilience and just the connection to this land. And we've been absolutely honored to be working with our Native nations as collaborators on this, mm-hmm. to see, okay, how should these canoes be handled going forward? How should they be displayed? How should they be interpreted? And I think we have some amazing things coming up with their help for the people of Wisconsin.
I don't want to gloss over something you just said. 4,500 years old is the oldest canoe fragments you've come across so far, correct?
Yes.
4,500.
4,500.
Has the state archaeologist or department, have you ever found artifacts dating back that far?
We have. You know, it's not uncommon. And the oldest artifacts we have in Wisconsin documented are around 14,000 years old. Wow. So right at the end of the Ice Age. Uh-huh. You know, they're little stone ships that are connected actually with mammoth and mastodon bones in Kenosha County. Mm-hmm. And you've asked the Ho-Chunks, the Menominee, Dakota, they say, oh, we've been here since time immemorial. Mm-hmm. You know, you shouldn't be surprised. So I don't know why we are.
Right.
But these are
us as European white descendants, yeah. I guess. Oh, wow, there's something 4,500 years old.
Wow. But there are stone tools. You know, stone survives almost forever. Mm. And you, any farmer in Wisconsin can tell you, oh, I've picked this up or that up. And, you know, sometimes people send us pictures or bring us the points. And we can say, yeah, that's 5,000 years old. That's 8,000 years old. That's 10,000 years old. And, you know, people have been on this land for a very, very long time. But when it comes to something perishable, wood, ooh, that's new.
Right.
And an entire watercraft, you know, the pickup truck of the day, that's an amazing find.
about 3.5 minutes left. I don't want to go without asking to get the answer on this one. How are these artifacts preserved, and will there become a day working with the tribal leaders, the indigenous folks in Wisconsin, where all Wisconsinites, all folks will be able to look at these things, to view them?
Oh, they sure will, yeah. So the canoes are currently sitting in a bath. It's a substance called polyethylene glycol, or PEG. If you've ever eaten a Skittle, you've eaten PEG.
Really?
It's a non-toxic wax. It's also a component in vaccines. So it took us a little while to get enough of this to conserve the consume. It was going someplace else for a while.
Imagine.
But they are soaking in this. It's going to remove the water from the wood and help support it once they're dried out. Because if we took them out now, they'd just crumble to dust. So the polyethylene glycol, or the PEG, is preserving them. Then they'll sit in that bath for about another year and a half. Then they'll go to a freeze-drying facility in Texas for a couple of months. And then by then, we hope that our new history center will be built on Madison's Capitol Square. So it's scheduled to open in 2027. And canoes are going to have pride of place in the Human Landscapes Gallery with lots of interpretation.
Yeah, as well they should, in my opinion. And for those of us who work and live in Madison, there's a demolition going down right now, or on right now, where the former State Historical Society was, and that's going to be the site eventually, correct?
That will be the site, yeah, right next to the Capitol. So perfect for all the school groups that come in. So they're going to be able to go visit the Capitol, then go see some canoes.
About a minute left here. How significant is this find in your world?
It's huge. It's absolutely huge. So when the first canoe came up and was recovered, we actually made Time Team's top 10 discoveries of the year. And if you're an archaeologist, that's like the Hall of Fame.
Wow.
You know, we beat out 30,000-year-old footprints in White Sands National Monument, and they're a little annoyed at us for that. But, you know, hey.
A throwdown of archaeologists.
Yeah, Time Team. So Time Team's based in Britain. So this story went global. You know, when it was picked up at Japan and Russia and Great Britain, Ireland. And so, yeah. Everyone likes canoes.
And I think everybody loves, or most people love, Wisconsin history. And in a time where, you know, certain events that are happening in 2 or 3 weeks here divide us, this is a great unifying story that all of us of Wisconsinites should be proud of, I think, to A, we've discovered this, and through your great work and your colleagues, it is being preserved. And there's a story being told. It's not lost on me that Monday is Columbus, quote unquote, / Indigenous Peoples Day. And now we're talking about this. And again, proving that Indigenous folks were here thousands of years before any of the rest of us.
And it's their story to tell. So we've just been very honored to help, you know, bring this forward.
Yeah. I know our friend Robert Pilot, the host of Native Roots Radio, who is on this network every night, just somebody I admire and telling these stories that need to be told of Indigenous folks all across the state of Wisconsin. Really appreciate it, Dr. Amy Roseborough, Wisconsin State Archaeologist. Thank you for coming and spending time with us today.
Okay, thank you.
Always a pleasure. Also, thanks to J.B. Van Hollen, former Attorney General, Mandela Barnes, former Lieutenant Governor of Wisconsin, Kelly Call, producer of the great new film, Just a Bit Outside, and Dr. Amy Roseborough. And, of course, Mr. Zommers, our wonderful producer and engineer, and all of you for listening. Todd Allball saying, whatever you believe in, whatever you're fighting for, do not give up. Keep banging your drum. Maggie Dawn is next. Have a great day.
You're listening to The Buzz of the North, WBZH, Hayward's home for Up North News Radio.
Todd Allbaugh.
Hey, everybody, join us next time as we will review the weekend happenings and look ahead as we count down towards election 2024. Be here.
The Todd Allbaugh Show, weekdays noon till 2.
Hi, I don't call radio stations very often.
Your calls are the best calls.
And keeping you inspired and informed is part of the civic media vision.
Thank you very much for broadcasting the Liz Cheney question and answer. I really appreciated that, hearing her voice, and for you to broadcast it like that was wonderful.
Listen to the Liz Cheney interview now on our website, civicmedia.us. Real news and great conversation.
Find it on your local civic media radio station and the app. Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us. This is the Buzz of the North. WBZH 910 AM, W245 CT Hayward, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Dave Packer. Power slowly returning to some Florida residents, but electric is still out to over 1.6 million customers in the wake of Hurricane Milton and the tornadoes that it spawned. President Biden heads there tomorrow.
The president will visit Florida on Sunday to tour the damage, and there is a lot to see on both coasts. Here on the east, those deadly tornadoes, and of course, the flooding on the west coast.
ABC's Victor Oquendo. 22 people were killed overnight in Jabalia in the West Bank and Israeli airstrikes, according to the Gaza Ministry of Health. The IDF this morning ordering that city to be evacuated, indicating the attacks will be part of a longer operation. Another 22 people at least killed in Israeli airstrikes in central Beirut. Local reports that a Hezbollah official was the target. In a letter released this morning, her doctors say Vice President Kamala Harris is in excellent health and that her last physical in April was unremarkable. Former President Trump has not released his medical records. This is ABC News. Friday night's NHL season opener was more than a game. It was a sign of hope and unity after the recent storms. The Carolina Hurricanes took on the Tampa Bay Lightning. Both teams' home states hit hard by Hurricanes Helene and Milton. ABC's Bianca Holman was at the Lenovo Center in Raleigh, North Carolina, talking to fans.
Kids and grandkids in hurricane gear and parents in blue and white.
We lived in Sarasota for 25 years.
Wow. The McKnight family now live just west of Asheville, so this precious time with family has a deeper meaning with the remnants of Hurricane Helene just missing their home. Marissa sharing,
I'm originally from Lakeland, Florida.
Thankfully, her grandmother Rita evacuated for Hurricane Milton.
They did lose power. They have a generator, some broken windows, and things of that nature.
Lightning fans going home with the win, but also, so much more.
Jews around the world observing Yom Kippur. The Day of Atonement is marked by prayer, fasting, and reflection. Dave Packer, ABC News.
The Todd Albaugh Show.
This narrative that the immigrants are coming to get you, that's fiction. Look at criminal charges in your community. And look how many of those people who have been there for years, if not decades, and how many of those people are new immigrants. And even a smaller percentage of how many are undocumented immigrants. It's not happening. It would be like going to places and say, well, you know what? I'm running for Congress to stop the zombies.
The Todd Albaugh Show. Weekdays, noon till 2 on your local civic media radio station and on the app. The Maggie Dawn Show.
Congresswoman Summer Lee.
The American Stability Act doesn't just address the need for raising of the wage. The second thing is that tax reform piece, shifting the burden from the folks who are working class to the not just the 1%, the 0.01% of people who have seen so many benefits in this rigged system, and we have to start to unrig it.
The Maggie Dawn Show. Weekdays from 2 till 4 on your local civic media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
Most people out here think that taking care of one another is important. And most people would step up for a neighbor going through a tough time. Most people around here help out friends and family when they need it. But the funny thing is, most of us won't look for help when we need it. Talk to someone if you're struggling with mental health, because most people out here really care. Find more information at loveyourmind.com.